Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and in the next half-hour segment, we're going to update stories having to do with health and scientific matters. The title of this segment is, that's right, Still More Fun with Science. The following was recorded on May 23rd, 1999. This is excerpted from the One Step Beyond show of that date. Is an article from the San Francisco Examiner of Thursday, May 13th of 1999. I've spoken at considerable length in numerous programs about what is at this point the virtual certainty that AIDS is a genetically engineered disease, a man-made disease in all likelihood deliberately created, and one that is now exerting an enormous impact around the world. Who listeners to whom that might appear fantastic can check out RFA 16 and numerous programs involving discussions with, among others, Ed Haslam, Dr. Leonard Horowitz, Dr. Alan Cantwell, and others in the For the Record series. Those are all available from Spitfire. And time permitting, I will give the address for Spitfire at the end of this half hour. This first article, again, from the San Francisco Examiner of 5-13-99, a Thursday, is from Eric Rosenberg of the Examiner Washington Bureau. It's datelined Washington and headlined, Spread of AIDS Virus Called Serious Threat to Stability of Asia and Africa. The article reads in part, Lawmakers and researchers warn that the rapid spread of the AIDS virus threatens to destabilize Africa and Asia unless the United States and other wealthy nations pump more resources into halting the spread of the disease in the developing world. Representative Jim McDermott, Democrat of Washington, the chairman of a congressional task force on the international scope of AIDS and HIV, said Wednesday that, quote, the general health of the developing world has suffered a setback unlike any other, unquote. Africa has been the hardest hit, but now there is evidence that Asia is on the brink and will soon be plunged into a crisis many times worse than Africa, unquote, McDermott told a House conference on AIDS. Citing UN statistics, McDermott said that in Africa and Asia, HIV infection rates were four times higher in the military than in the civilian populations. Quote, this will soon lead to a major destabilization of militaries throughout the developing world, he said, again quoting, if the United States is to help maintain global security, then we as a nation must realize that HIV/AIDS could have a massive and very negative effect on global security, unquote. Former Representative Ron Dellums, Democrat of Oakland, a 27-year House veteran who now heads Atlanta-based Healthcare International Management Company, which provides health services in poor countries, warned that AIDS was sowing seeds of political instability in Africa by creating a generation of hopeless and impoverished orphans. And skipping down, according to the World Health Organization, 83% of worldwide AIDS deaths have occurred in sub-Saharan Africa, and at least 95% of all children whose parents died of AIDS are African. The World Health Organization reported this week that AIDS had become the world's most deadly infectious disease in the last year. And that's by way of gaining some perspective on the AIDS epidemic. And in all likelihood, we are looking at deliberate genocide. And yet we're not hearing about the genocide that's going on in Africa. And again, I can appreciate that for newer listeners, this might appear to be utterly crazy, even heretical, perhaps. Again, the documentation, unfortunately, is there, RFA 16, and numerous segments about AIDS and HIV that are available from Spitfire, and contact Spitfire, or if you have access to the World Wide Web, take a look at the World Wide Web. One of the things that I've been discussing at considerable length for the last several years is Project HARP. That is a military project in which tremendous amounts of radiation are going to be beamed, by the way, it's electromagnetic radiation, are going to be beamed into the ionosphere by a series of transmitters located up in Alaska. This particular military technology has a number of projected applications, including not only defense against guided missiles, but also utilizing the patents to control the weather for military purposes. And it appears to have grave implications in terms of mind control techniques that can be utilized by altering the brainwave patterns of entire populations. And by the same token, electromagnetic radiation can be used on those same populations to alter their body chemistry with pathogenic or even lethal
effect. The probable applications of the HAARP technology also involve, in all likelihood, being able to trigger earthquakes and other seismic events as well. The Project HAARP has been termed a revolution in military affairs, or RMA, and it is just exactly that. Many of the projected developments on Project HAARP were covered in a treaty that the U.S. and former Soviet Union had concluded by the late 1970s. So, for example, if I talk about altering the weather for military purposes or triggering earthquakes, this will appear to be utter nutcase fare for some members of the listening audience. Unfortunately, the documentation is there, and indeed with regard to causing earthquakes, as discussed in a pair of half-hour segments entitled Even More Fun with Science. Nikola Tesla had caused a small earthquake in New York City back in 1896, more than 100 years ago, and Tesla's technological developments stand at the very core of military R&D today. Indeed, Tesla passed away in 1943, and yet more than a half century after his death, more than half of his patents and half his papers are still classified top secret. The precise implications of Tesla technology can only be guessed at by perhaps even knowledgeable people, because, as I said, an awful lot of what Tesla worked on is still classified more than 50 years after his death. To give people an idea of just how revolutionary, though, Tesla technology is, we're going to turn to an article that was written by Dr. Nick Begich, who, along with Gene Manning, was the co-author of Angels Don't Play This HAARP, the Further Developments in Tesla Technology. And that book is the definitive text about Project HAARP. By the way, HAARP is capital, is all capital letters, H-A-A-R-P. This particular article by Nick Begich is on an Australian website. It's called www.newage.com. That's www.newageoneword.com. And as people know, I'm pretty leery of an awful lot of what gets subsumed under the title New Age, although it's an awfully broad title. But this particular steer with regard to Project HAARP appears to be largely substantive. There's some information from the Art Bell Show, which should also always be taken with a grain of salt. But Nick Begich's article on this particular website is right on the money. And again, this is www.newage.com is the website. It is it's called Subject, Secret Government Research, HAARP. And this is from somebody, I guess it's New Age Online Australia. Anyway, that's the name of the website. This article by Dr. Nick Begich is called Was Tesla's Magnifying Transmitter a Precursor to HAARP? And it reads in part as follows. When I first examined the Eastland patent records, a cold chill ran through me as I realized that the diagrams I was seeing were reminiscent of patents issued to Nikola Tesla in the late 19th and early 20th century. By the way, Eastland, E-A-S-T-L-U-N-D, is the last name of Bernard Eastland, who held many of the key patents on HAARP. Continuing with the article. Furthermore, among the reference sources in the patent itself were two articles from the New York Times. When I reviewed the articles, I found they were about Tesla. The articles that were referenced in the U.S. patent were extremely interesting in that they were in part the basis for the research into this current technology. The first article from the New York Times, December 8, 1915, contained, now bear in mind this is when the World War I was going on, and quoting here from the article, Nikola Tesla, the inventor, has filed patent applications on the essential parts of a machine, the possibilities of which test a layman's imagination, and promise a parallel of Thor's shooting thunderbolts from the sky to punish those who had angered the gods. And again, listen this particular description again from the New York Times, December 8, 1915. Nikola Tesla, the inventor, has filed patent applications on the essential parts of a machine, the possibilities of which test a layman's imagination, and promise a parallel of Thor's shooting thunderbolts from the sky to punish those who had angered the gods. Suffice it to say that the invention will go through space with a speed of 300 miles a second, a manless ship without propelling engine or wings, sent by electricity to any desired point on the globe on its errand of destruction, if destruction is what its manipulator wishes to effect. Quote, it is not a time, said Dr. Tesla yesterday, again quoting, to go into the details of this thing. It is founded upon a principle that means great things in peace. It can be used for great things in war, but I repeat, this is not the time to talk of such things, unquote. And of course, at the time, Tesla, who was a pacifist, was speaking, this was when World War I was going on. Again, the article, 12.8.15, continuing, and again quoting Dr. Tesla, "It is perfectly practicable to transmit electrical energy without wires and produce destructive effects at a distance. I have already constructed a wireless transmitter which makes this possible and have described it in my technical publications, which I refer to, among which I refer to my patent number 1,119,732, recently granted. With a transmitter of this kind, we are enabled to project electrical energy in any amount to any distance and apply it for innumerable purposes, both in war and peace. Through the universal adoption of this system, ideal conditions for the maintenance of law and order will be realized, for then the energy necessary to the enforcement of right and justice will be normally productive, yet potential in any moment available for attack and defense. The power transmitted need not necessarily be destructive, for if distance is made to depend on it, its withdrawal or supply will bring about the same results as those now accomplished by force of arms," unquote. And again, Tesla was speaking of this technology in 1915. Bear in mind, he died in 43. More than half of his papers are still classified secret. Continuing, the next article referred to in the patent also ran in the New York Times on September 22, 1940, and read as follows. Nikola Tesla, one of the truly great inventors who celebrated his 84th birthday on July 10th, tells the writer that he stands ready to divulge to the United States government the secret of this teleforce, with which he said airplane motors would be melted at a distance of 250 miles so that an invisible Chinese wall of defense would be built around the country. The teleforce, he said, is based on an entirely new principle of physics that, quote, no one has ever dreamed about, unquote, different from the principle embodied in his inventions relating to the transmission of electrical power from a distance, for which he has received a number of basic patents. This new type of force, Mr. Tesla said, would operate through a beam 1/100,000,000th of a square centimeter in diameter, and could be generated from a special plant that would cost not more than $2 million and would only take about 3 months to construct. The beam, he states, involves four new inventions, two of which already have been tested. One of these is a method and apparatus for producing rays, quote, and other manifestations or energy, unquote, in free air, eliminating the necessity for a high vacuum. A second is a method and process for producing very great electrical force, unquote. The third is a new method for producing a tremendous electrical repelling force, unquote. This would be the projector or gun of the system. The voltage for propelling the beam to its objective, according to the inventor, will attain a potential of 50 million volts. With this enormous voltage, he said, microscopic electrical particles of matter will be catapulted on their mission of defensive destruction. He has been working on this invention, he added, for many years, and has recently made a number of improvements in it. There was a third reference, which was apparently authored by Tesla, which could not be obtained. The ideas expressed by Tesla in these articles raise more questions about the version of law and order likely to arise from any military organization controlling such technology. In recent days, we have seen many of the excesses of the military establishment in testing their peacekeeping technologies to the detriment of individuals in the population. If this technology is to be implemented anywhere, it should be done so openly and honestly, and only when it can be demonstrated as safe and worthwhile for improving the human condition. And again, this article is by Nick Begich, Dr. Nick Begich, the co-author along with Gene Manning of Angels Don't Play This Harp. It's available as one of a number of pages on a website, www.newage.com. And again, my deep reservations about the New Age should not be confused with the validity of Tesla technology, most of the instrumentalities of which remain secret, again, more than 50 years after his death. Now, the instrumentalities described in these two articles, respectively from 1915 and 1940, both of those articles referenced in the text of the Bernard Eastland patents for harp, it should be stated that these hover at the very periphery of my own technological understanding. I can only dimly envision what they're talking about here. Nonetheless, I don't think one need be a physicist to say that there is some pretty scary mojo apparently lying in the background of these developments. And one of the things that I've cautioned listeners to be ready for is manifestations of what might be represented, for example, as aliens from another world or from another dimension or something, allegedly superior beings with what will certainly appear to be superior technology because of the suppression of the technology of Nikola Tesla and others. In fact, the potential for human technological development is far in advance of what the public has been led to believe, and I think that listeners need to be very, very alert for the possible misuse of various types of technology and for a War of the Worlds broadcast type scenario that I've envisioned in which a simulated alien invasion of one type or another will be utilized as some sort of political and psychosocial stratagem of one type or another. I've done a number of programs about the myth of the ETs. There are no ETs that we've ever come across or that have ever come across us. In fact, there is very, very firm evidence at this point that the alleged contact with beings from another planet or these incidents of contact have been deliberately staged by elements within our own and others' national security establishments, many of those elements overtly fascistic. In other words, the whole alien slash ET thing has been deliberately manufactured by elements of our own and other countries' national security establishments. It's a deliberate shuck. There is no evidence that we've ever been in contact with any beings from another planet. However, the reality concerning so-called UFOs or flying saucers is of an exactly opposite nature. They are real. They're quite well documented if one knows where to look. They do not come from outer space, but rather they're technological developments that hail to the closing stages of World War II. There are probably so-called UFOs or flying saucers that use Tesla technology and whose propulsion mechanism and most of the other aspects of their instrumentalities would be incomprehensible in all likelihood to yours truly. But the original UFOs were anti-aircraft devices developed by the Germans in the closing stages of World War II and then developed under Project Paperclip by the victorious Western allies, chiefly the United States. In a half-hour segment a pair of half-hour segments recorded in July of 1997, there's discussion of the development of the technologies of Reimar and Walter Horton that was conducted in the United States under Project Paperclip. Project Paperclip, again, for the benefit of listeners not familiar with it, was a massive operation at the end of World War II to import many of the Third Reich's and Fascist Japan's top defense scientists in order to continue their research in the United States. The best known of the Project Paperclip operations involved the importation of the Nazi rocket scientists from Peenemünde Nordhausen, including former SS officer Werner von Braun, to work for the U.S. space program. And the Freedom of Information Act documents obtained by Popular Mechanics and discussed, by the way, in the cover story of their July 1997 issue involve, among other things, something called Project Silverbug, which was basically a so-called flying saucer developed by the United States, having nothing to do with technology coming from, quote, aliens, unquote. And this particular aircraft, again, operational by the late 40s, could reach the cruising altitude of modern airliners in a minute and 20 seconds and could cruise at Mach 0.3. That aircraft, in all likelihood, was radio-controlled, at least in the late 1940s. So again, I think as a species and as citizens of the United States, I think we have to be on our alert for the man behind the curtain and whatever sort of impressive displays of sparks and smoke and explosions and noises that they develop. And I think we need to be looking behind that curtain to understand that some of the incomprehensible and or miraculous things that may be presented to us as either the work of aliens or the work of some sort of supernatural beings or the second coming of Christ, you name it, We have to be alert for the use of technologies that have been developed but kept secret in order to bring not only the citizens of the United States but the entire human race to its knees, because I believe that just such a thing is possible if we let our guard down. And hopefully that reading of some of the excerpts from the texts concerning patents developed by Nikola Tesla in 1915 and 1940 will give people at least some perspective on the types of things that we need to be prepared for. If, for example, so-called UFOs come down with death rays, don't assume they're from outer space. Consider the possibility that these may be based right here on terra firma. And when we're told that, in fact, this is the manifestation of aliens and we need to be ready to work with our brothers from space because they have all this superior technology and they're obviously far ahead of what we're doing, and therefore we need to trust them because they're our brothers from space. Just remember, they aren't your brothers, and they don't come from space, okay? Alrighty, that's something people need to be very, very much on alert for. By the way, in addition to the various half-hour segments that I've done about the E.T. myth and the reality of, quote, UFOs, unquote, in addition to the For the Record half-hour segments, there are two very important lectures that are available from Spitfire. One is called The Political Implications of the UFO Phenomenon and the E.T. Myth, that from the fall of 1992, and also one that's called The Future, Technology, Theocracy, and the Thousand-Year Reich. And both of those involve some of my ruminations concerning projections into the future and how some of this technology might be utilized. In the aforementioned lecture discussed, or entitled The Political Implications of the UFO Phenomenon and the E.T. Myth, as well as in the aforementioned pair of half-hour segments from July of 1997, I discussed one of the possible scenarios that I think we need to be alert for, namely the use of genetic engineering to create living Earth beings that would have an unusual appearance and which might be represented to the public as, quote, aliens, unquote. And these genetically engineered creatures could be deployed in combination with some of these types of technology. That and this could be represented to us as the coming of our brothers from space or our enemies from space or what have you. A listener, a very sharp listener, hunted down something off of the Internet. This, by the way, comes from the CNN news site, and this can be located at www.cnn.com, the CNN website, by the way, www.cnn.com. It, in turn, is a Reuters story, and it is datelined Washington, D.C., and headlined, it was absolutely, it's called Glowing Green Mice Offer New Way to Change Genes. And this was posted on May 14th, 1999. And the subtitle of this is, It Was Absolutely Fantastic. Again, from the CNN website, a Reuters story, Dateline Washington, posted on May 14th, 1999. It's headlined, Glowing Green Mice Offer New Way to Change Genes. And the article reads, Green glowing mice that carry a jellyfish gene have shown that sperm can be used to genetically engineer animals, researchers said yesterday, or said Thursday, excuse me. The research team, which made headlines last year by cloning generations of mice, said its technique improved on current hit-and-miss methods in which scientists painstakingly inject new genes into animals they are trying to alter, or use a virus to deliver the new genes. Anthony Perry and colleagues at the University of Hawaii in Honolulu said they recruited nature's tried-and-true method for mixing up genes using sperm. Quote, The great thing about this new method is that it is very straightforward, Perry told Science Magazine, which published the findings, again quoting, It may prove to be more efficient. It was absolutely fantastic, is the subheading here. The same team, which includes Japanese researchers Teruhiko Wakayama, last name capital W-A-K-A-Y-A-M-A, and Ryuzu Yanagamachi, that's Y-N-A-G-I-M-A-C-H-I, not only cloned the first mice, but have done experiments with mouse sperm using freeze-dried sperm to fertilize eggs. They showed that dead sperm heads still carried viable genetic material. In the latest experiment, they took this research a step further, freeze-drying mouse sperm, mixing them with DNA from another species, and injecting the mixture into mouse eggs. They then put those eggs into female mice using standard techniques for making test tube babies in animals and humans. In this case, they used genes that make jellyfish glow green. It made it easy to look for the genes in the resulting baby mice. They just put them under an ultraviolet light to see if their skin glowed green. This last couple of sentences again. In this case, they used genes that make jellyfish glow green. It made it easy to look for the genes in the resulting baby mice. They just put them under an ultraviolet light to see if their skin glowed green. It was absolutely fantastic to see these little mice glowing green, Perry said in a telephone interview. The new pups are bald, so the green glow is easy to detect. Up to 80% of the embryos they created in a laboratory dish also glowed green. They implanted those into surrogate mother mice. Not all of them do make it, Perry said, but of the pups that are born, 25% of those pups have taken up the green gene. Because of the vagaries of biology, only 80% of those actually become green. So overall, 1 in 5 of the pups is green, unquote. The gene is passed on when the first generation is bred, quote, we wanted to see whether their pups also inherited the green gene, and the answer is, in a very high proportion of cases, yes, Perry said. Again, so when I talk about the possibility of genetically engineering little green men or something of that kind, as fantastic as that undoubtedly will appear to some members of the listening audience, just bear in mind what is already possible. And I noted that in the mid-1980s, there was a picture of a tobacco leaf from a tobacco plant that had a gene from a firefly spliced into it, and the tobacco plant was glowing like a firefly. Now, here was a gene from an insect transplanted or spliced into a plant, and it gave the same physical characteristic in the plant that it did in the insect. And here we've got mice that are glowing green because they've had a jellyfish gene exerted into them. At least they glow green when they're placed under ultraviolet light. So, again, I think we need to be very, very, very much on alert for the utilization of suppressed technologies to produce miracles of one type or another. We could be handed a superficial rapture or an artificial, I should say, rapture or tribulation with storms and plagues and droughts and floods and earthquakes and volcanoes, all of which now can be created or altered by Project HAARP. We are in the age of genetic engineering. There could be terrible plagues visited upon the iniquitous, and miracles, flying saucers with death beams piloted by little green glowing men. And we need to be on the alert for this, because this is not something now in the future, people. This is something which is doable now. And as Albert Einstein once noted in connection with our development of the atomic bomb, and something that I think is even more true today, everything has changed but our way of thinking, because we now have technologies such as the revolutionary mind control techniques, which would have been viewed as only accessible to a deity or a supernatural being up to a very short time ago, and yet now human beings have these capabilities. And for all of our marvelous technology, at root we're still the same old marrow-sucking, femur-cracking Neanderthals that we've always been. And I don't like the idea of people as obviously imperfect as we are having this type of technology. And I think the potential counter to this is for all of us to be on alert for the abuse of this type of thing. The age of the little green man coming out of a flying saucer and using a death ray may not be nearly as far off as people think. And if one does see such a thing, or if we are presented with such a thing, don't assume it comes from outer space. Now, I've alluded to various programs and lectures. Those are all available from a tape duplication service called Spitfire. That's one word, capital S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E. They're located at P.O. Box 1179. That's P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. Email spitfire@ix.netcom.com. That's spitfire@ix.netcom.com. There's a list of and description of all of the tapes available from Spitfire on the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com. That's www.spitfirelist.com. That concludes this segment. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.